When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writing excuses.
You're invited to the Writing Excuses Cruise, an annual event for writers who want dedicated time to focus on honing their craft, connecting with their peers, and getting away from the grind of daily life. Join the full cast of Writing Excuses as we sail from Los Angeles aboard the Navigator of the Seas from September 19th through the 27th of 2024, with stops in Ensenada, Cabo San Lucas, and Mazatlan. The cruise offers seminars, exercises, and group sessions, an ideal blend of relaxation, learning, and writing, all while sailing the Mexican Riviera. For tickets and more information, visit writingexcuses.com/retreats.
Season 19, Episode 32. This is Writing Excuses,
an interview on character with C.L. Clarke.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Erin.
And we have a special guest with us today, C.L. Clarke. You've been reading their work for a couple of weeks now, and we are extremely happy to have them with us.
Hi, everyone. I'm C.L. Clarke. I am the author of The Unbroken and The Faithless and several short stories. I'm really excited to be here.
Yay. So the reason that we picked your stories was we wanted to have this conversation about character. And there were a couple of things that short stories offered the opportunity to do, which was to look at how you built three different characters, three different POV characters, in a very compressed space. We looked at The Cook, Your Eyes, My Beacon, being an account of several misadventures and how I found my way home, and You Perfect Broken Thing. And all three of these characters are really distinct. They have different backgrounds. They have different personalities, different wants. What are you doing when you're sitting down and thinking, it's time for me to write a short story and I guess it should have a character?
Okay, so I should also say that I have been a really big fan of Writing Excuses from a very, very long time ago. And so one of the things that I do, not with every story, but for many stories, I actually stole from you, Mary Robinette.
Oh, convenient.
Very convenient, but I used to be a Patreon, a patron on your Patreon, and you shared at some point this sort of plot process thing that you did. And there's, at the beginning of that plot processing, you do this sort of, or you did, I don't know if you still do it, but I mm-hmm. found it really helpful that you would do this kind of triaging of characters and like starting with who would be there at this whatever place or a situation you'd be in, pick a few that you'd be interested in focusing on or that you're just mostly interested in, and then asking what they want and really drilling down into the stakes. And I found that the more you figured out a character's world and situation, the better, the more distinct they became. Mm-hmm. And the more distinct they became, the more interesting their story was, and the more they, I was able to kind of hone in on what made this story different from other stories that I was writing.
I think that that's, so first of all, I'm super glad that that worksheet is useful. It is on the podcast website, so folks can grab it. But I also find that, like, knowing what is important to a character is one of the things that really drives this. And the part of the reason this is coming to like, oh yeah, that's a really good reminder, is that I just wrote a short story with a character who is a secondary character in the Lady Astronaut novels, and wrote her as a main character and realized I did not know her at all. Mm-hmm. And it is that, like, what is she afraid of? Like, what does she want? What does happiness look like for her?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah,
I was going to say, I wonder, because I was thinking about, like, what characters want. And I think one of the really interesting things in all of these stories is that all the characters have, like, kind of big wants on the surface, like big things that they're dealing with. Like, I need to get through this, you know, competition, you know, I need to, you know, I'm in the middle of this war, I need to figure out what's going on with this lighthouse. But I feel like when I think about the characters and what they want, I keep thinking back to their relationships mm-hmm. with the other characters. So I'm wondering, like, mm-hmm. when you're coming up with this, are you thinking about those big stakes? Are you thinking about, like, their internal, like, what they're dealing with, you know, on the inside? Both.
Because I really like writing stories about relationships, and not always romantic, but often romantic, just because I think stories are most interesting for me personally when the thing that is getting in the way is another person. Mm-hmm. And the other person can also be yourself. It is very often like, I want this and I also want that. And somehow they're mutually exclusive. But how somebody navigates around another person, not necessarily just in like a physical, like, now I'm going to beat this person and kill them and now I have whatever, but like negotiating or developing a relationship to get what you want is very interesting to me. And so they're not necessarily distinct when I think of whatever the stakes are, but since that other person is usually one of the three characters that I kind of brainstormed at the beginning, they just sort of come loop together already, if that makes sense. Like, they're a web that I can start pulling on and tying together.
Yeah, that does make sense, because, you know, there's that saying, everybody's the hero of their own story. So if you start thinking about what the stakes are, what the other person's wants are, one of the things that I particularly love in The Cook is how much that story is really just about the relationship. Like, there's this massive war that happens off stage that we spend a lot of time talking about how delicious it is to watch both characters change in each scene that they're in, their relationship to each other, inflected by this experience that we don't participate in. We only participate in their relationship. And that's I think one of the things that is really lovely and beautiful about having given them both something that they want, something that's driving them.
Yeah, and I also think it's interesting because, like, even though like the war is such a small part in some ways of the story, you know, it casts such a big shadow. Like, it's not like you could take that story and be like, it's not a war anymore, it's a parade, and it would be the same story, you know. It would be a very, very, very different story. And I love that you're able to look. Takes a lot of planning. There's so many instruments.
Balloons got away.
Swirlers. Yeah, it's a lot. But the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade version of the cook is such a different story because we feel the impact of things that you don't even show us. And I love that you were saying that they come to you intertwined because they feel intertwined. It mm-hmm. feels like if you took out a thread from one, it would unravel the thread of the other, even if it isn't a thread that we see that like hugely on the page, like explicitly. So I just love that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Also, when please write the cook at the Thanksgiving Day.
Please.
Cook yeah. sequel. Yeah.
AU fan fiction. I do AU fan fiction of my own work. So.
Do yeah, you? Wait. Say more.
Yeah. I've done it too. On my website. Some of it is not as wholesome, so, you know.
Yep.
I know what I'm doing after this. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Having the same thoughts. Like your novels too. And that's interesting to me. Do you find that you have to approach character differently when you write at novel length than you do when you're writing at short length?
Absolutely. 100%. There are like just on the very barest level, kind of what you said, Mary Robinette, about your side character that you didn't know at all mm-hmm. when you actually started trying to write her story. Some stuff that I can get away with in a short story just doesn't fly in a novel. Because for me, I can just feel it when I have to be with a character longer, even if they're a side character, if they're load bearing at all and they're not fleshed out enough, I can just feel it. And every scene with them feels a little flat or they, I don't know. They just don't feel, I've actually been dealing with this recently, with characters in a couple of different books. And, there's just something about even scenes that they're not in or other character storylines, like main character storylines, that feel off if someone is supposed to be important, but they're not fleshed out enough to them. Mm-hmm. In the novel series, in The Unbroken and The Faithless, there is a friend of the princess's named Sabine, who I love to pieces, but I had to work a lot on her because she is not ever got a point of view chapter or anything like that, but she's supposed to be really important to Luca, enough that Luca makes some questionable decisions about her mm-hmm. Or around her. And if she's not, if Sabine is not a strong enough character to deserve those decisions, then the whole book kind of falls apart. So yeah, it's very different that way.
Yeah. I wonder if, as we're thinking about it, because I do tend to think of them as being in the same general toolbox, I wonder how much of it is audience expectation that in the short story, we know that the author can't include everything. And so we're so used to filling in the gaps for them. Mm-hmm. But in the novel, we hunger for that, for those details that are not necessarily there. And we're with them longer too.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also that idea of load bearing. Like, mm-hmm. I love that as a concept. Like, you're not holding up as much stuff. Like a short story is like, you know, you're just holding up like an umbrella and not a house. Yeah. And so the amount that you need to know in order to bear that load seems like it would be a lot less. And
yeah, I mean, if
I don't know if that is true for you or even how you figure out what is it that you need to know to make the story work either in short or novel length.
I think like, definitely one of the things that seems easier in a short story is not easier, just for the characters, that part of the reason I think that you can sort of sketch out the gist is partly reader expectation, but partly it's easier to work with negative space when like so much of a short story and the world building and the plot, all of it is negative space. Whereas with a novel, all of it is, not all of it, but a much higher percentage of it is fully filled out. And like main characters in short stories are not the fullest, most fleshed out things always compared to a novel protagonist.
Yeah, that's true. I like the way you're thinking about it with negative space, and that probably appeals to me because I was an art major. For people who haven't heard this term before, it refers to a concept when you're looking at a picture. There's the object that the subject of the picture, you know, there's a vase or a person. And then the negative space is all of the stuff that is around them. And that negative space is as much a part of the composition as the figure itself. And I think it's a very useful concept in short fiction. The one where you see it the most clearly is The Cook, where so much of the war happens in the negative space. But I think it's also, you know, it's also there very much in You Perfect Broken Thing as well. You know, just lines like one of my favorite lines I have a lot of favorite lines, but at the end of the very first scene, you say, "This is not my first race." And that is such a good example of like telling you so much. You're not describing all of the other races. You're not doing any of that, but you're giving us this negative space and we can pour the rest of ourselves into it. I think it does a really good job of creating, creating space for the reader in the story.
I was just thinking about this negative space idea and like what readers expect, because I was thinking like, if you leave, it's basically what you already said, but if you leave negative space in a story, it feels intentional. And if you leave negative space in a novel, it often feels like you just forgot that, like you just forgot that part of the page. Like I just stopped coloring and left. And I'm wondering though, in a short story, like how do you know what you do need to fill in? Like in order to cast that shadow, like how do you know that you need to like make a reference even to a first race, which you didn't have to do at all? It could have been like, no, I'm just telling you about the current thing. Like, how do you pick those pieces that give you enough of like an outline that the negative space comes through in a really clear, cool way?
That is something that I struggled very hard with when I first started writing short stories. But I do want to just drop in negative space in novels. I do think that it can work. I just think it's harder to navigate with like the current sort of expectation in the fantasy genre of quicker paced kind of reads where things are a little bit more spelled out sometimes. And I think I have a fair amount of negative space in my novels as well. Just I don't necessarily rely on it in the same way as I do in short fiction for like understanding and plot. But back to how I was working on what to pick to put in a short story, I struggled for a really long time actually, before I ever got short stories published, with writing really, really epic short stories, because I really like epic fantasy. And it's really hard to write an epic novel or an epic sized world in 5,000 words. And so the first story I ever got published was called Burning Season, and it got published at Podcastle. But I remember one of the critiques that I had when I was trying to get it ready was, this isn't a short story, this is a novel. And I was like, well, I don't want to write this novel right now, so I'm going to figure out how to make it a short story. And it was basically not figuring out what to put in, but figuring out what to take out. And so I just took out as much as I could without losing the meaning. So there was a lot of, all right, well, if I take out this, does this paragraph still make sense? If I take out this entire scene, can I still get the spirit of what the scene was trying to get across? And basically, I just kept whittling it down and out until I could condense it into its smallest form while still having the sense of the world and the magic that was required and the history. So
that's fantastic. And I think let's make a little bit of negative space for our thing of the week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This message comes from our sponsor, Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so the thing of the week that I would like to talk about is a book. It's called Reasons Not to Worry, How to Be Stoic in Chaotic Times by Brigid Delaney. And I did not know that I was going to be sharing a sort of pop philosophy book today, but it has been really helpful in reframing not just like, you know, the world at large, but my writing career or being in the writing industry, because the idea of stoicism is primarily about letting go of the things you cannot control. And by golly, the writing industry is a thing that not a single one of us can control.
What?
So if you are looking into this as a career and whether you're in it or aspiring to it, you're going to have to let go of a lot. And this could help you do that.
Fantastic. So as we return from our negative space, I wanted to kind of switch gears just a little bit and talk about Your Eyes, My Beacon, being an account of several misadventures and how I found my way home. And even the title of it has a different character than like the cook. But one of the things that's also very interesting about this one, and from a character point of view, is literally the point of view. You are balancing two character POVs, one of which you give us in first person and the other you give us in third. Do you remember why you made that choice?
I think I wanted to make it distinct from, I wanted to make the lighthouse keeper distinct from the sailor, not the pirate. But I think it was because the lighthouse keeper felt more distant, a little more cranky. And to me, it was the better way to get across some of that anger. Mm-hmm. But also because I often find that two first person point of views are harder to distinguish. And so that was the easier way for me. As well as I knew that I didn't want to spend a lot of time in the lighthouse keeper's point of view. So having these little tiny barks was actually more, it seemed more fitting as a, like a section break as opposed to a point of view. So it helped distinguish it structurally as well.
When you said you didn't want to spend a lot of time in the lighthouse keeper's point of view, was that, I mean, I could try to structure this in a different way, but why?
Because I still think that the story that I wanted to tell was primarily the sailors. And yes, it is about their relationship. And yes, the lighthouse keeper also has some changing and growing to do, but ultimately it was about the change that the sailor had to make in terms of selfishness and, I don't know, like what she was willing to give up to be with someone or not give up. And that was, it was, that was just more her story. And I didn't also, like, there are secrets in the story. And so having too much of the lighthouse keeper's point of view would have been harder to obfuscate that without resorting to tricks I don't know how to do. So.
but that's a really good point, that when you're looking at something where you are needing to withhold information from the reader, that it is much easier to play fair with them if you stay in third person because of that distance that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about what you just said about relationships and like whose perspective we're in the relationship. And I'm wondering, like, do you just tend to find yourself drawn to, like, all of these stories have relationships at their core, like one character over the other, and like that's always the person you were going in with? Does it ever shift in any way as you learn more about the characters and the story and like whose perspective you want to use?
I don't think so. I think I have a sense very early on of whose story I want to be telling and who has, again, back to that idea of stakes, but who has most stakes in the relationship or has the most to learn or change from in their convergence. And I go in pretty well, but it is a little different from my novels when I have more space to have multiple points of views. So like in The Unbroken and The Faithless, Luca and Terrain are both like, they have romantic tension, but they get both of their perspectives in the novel. And that is, it's very different when I have to show both sides, but it does just offer more nuance. Like I get to play with the idea, like with the sailor and the lighthouse keeper, the sailor has all sorts of thoughts about the lighthouse keeper, and we don't ever get to see if all of them are correct. Like if she thinks that she's snotty or stuck up, we don't get to see her the lighthouse keeper's reasoning for her snotty and stuck up behavior, which may or may not actually be her being snotty or stuck up. Whereas when you have both points of views, you can almost immediately cut that tension by giving their reasoning. But it creates a different kind of tension, which is, well, now that we know they both have different opinions of this action, how will they resolve that? And so I think it really just depends on what kind of tension you're more interested in playing with, honestly.
Yeah. And I think that's a really important thing to remind readers, you know, what are you more interested in playing with? Or remind our listeners. So often we get hung up on, oh, this is, you know, what's going to be the best thing for the market? What's going to be the best thing for this or that? But really, it's about, what do you want as the writer? Where do you want to spend your time and energy?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, unless someone has developed this without my knowledge, last I checked, we cannot read other people's minds. And so sometimes it is more interesting to explore that without... with having a character who only has the same capacities that we do. So.
Yeah.
We should develop that. No, we should.
No,
no, no, no, no, no, no, no, no. No.
Mary Robin had mentioned like markets, and it reminded me of something I was thinking about before we started recording, which is that like all of these stories are in Uncanny, and we didn't do it on purpose, but it happened. And I'm curious, and also you were an editor at Podcastle for many seasons. And so I'm wondering how, like, what you think the interaction is between like what you're writing and where it ends up. Like, do you ever write for a specific market? Do you just think it turns out to be a good fit accidentally? I'm curious where that plays into your writing process.
It's actually shifted a little bit, especially now that I do write a fair bit of my short fiction now on commission. or invitation just because of timing. But I think the reason, for example, that I do have so many short stories in Uncanny has a lot to do with the kind of stories I like to write. And I think if I were, like, by percentage, I think most of my short stories are either at Uncanny or Beneath Ceaseless Skies. And it's no, like, it's no surprise because those are the ones that I read very often. And obviously Podcastle, but I can't count that because I kind of helped build that taste. So as an editor, so I know it. But like with the other two, I think that I have so many stories in there because that is where I naturally gravitate. They both venues make space for the second world stuff that I like to do. With Uncanny, though, there's a bit more flexibility for a little more of the realistic. I don't tend to do hard or spacey sci-fi very often, and so it's very often near future, and that tends to go best at Uncanny compared to other science fiction venues. High character focus at both venues as well. And we're on the character podcast. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like you write character-focused fiction. Interesting. Strange. Yeah, the first thing that I read of yours was You Perfect Broken Thing. And it's a story that I keep going back to when people are saying, oh, you know, short fiction, you can't really do much with it. I'm like, excuse me. Because it's really actually, it's less than 4,000 words.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Huh.
3930 according to Uncanny, which has the thing up at the top, but it feels bigger in scope. And I think that some of that is how specific you get in this story in particular with the sensory details that the character notices. Like it is such a grounded story, and we don't actually go that many places. We go to the gym, we go home, and then we go to the race. How do you think about sensory detail when you're thinking about character?
With that story in particular, it's especially sharp for me because she's a very embodied character. And most of my characters are. They're very physical, whether they're fighters or dancers or athletes, because that's just something that I'm very interested in. But it was that story. I wrote it while I was in some creative writing classes. And so I was really, really paying attention to a lot of different things. But one thing that I had rattling around my head was something from a teacher who said, pick something from your job. And at the time I was a personal trainer. He said, pick something from your job and then just write every single detail about your job. And so that was everything from what do I see at my gym? What do I hear at my gym? What are people doing? What are we drinking? What are we eating? Like, and so that was everything from the sweat to the pre-workout, like the locker room smells, like there was so much of that. And then the other thing that I did and I really enjoyed was I did a couple exercises from Ursula K. Le Guin's Steering the Craft. One of my favorite things. So everybody like gets like a 2-for-1 of recommended books from me.
It's so good.
There's like one is the write a really long sentence one, and one is the write a really choppy kind of crush type paragraph. And so if you read the story, you can pick out which ones came from two of her exercises. But they also have a high emphasis on sensory detail as well. So.
Those are great, great examples. I know exactly what you're talking about in each, because we are, as our listeners know, we talk about that during the podcast. I think that that's actually probably a really good place for us to segue to our formal homework, since we've given you some accidental ones, like go read Steering the Craft and do that exercise.
Do every exercise.
Yes. And I think you have some homework for us.
I do. So I as you guys can probably tell, I pay a lot of attention to the other instructors and writers with like stuff to share. And so this exercise, this next exercise comes from another writing teacher that I love. His name is Matt Bell. And one of this his exercises is about, it's called Four Scenes About Power. And the exercise is as follows. You will write four scenes, whether they're in a short story, a novel draft, or just like this sort of like triptych quartet thing. And one is a scene in which your protagonist does something to someone else, so they act upon them. A scene in which your protagonist does something for someone else, so acting on their behalf. A scene in which your protagonist has something done to them, so they are acted upon and react to that. And then finally, a scene in which your protagonist does something with someone or something else, so they are acting in collaboration with another character or a group of other characters.
That is a great exercise. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Of course.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends.
Your hosts for this episode of Writing Excuses were Aaron Roberts and Mary Robinette Kowal, with special guest C.L. Clark.
This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.